Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast on Radio MD. This is Dr. Mike Roizen, and we have a spectacular guest for you. Stephen Gundry wrote The Longevity Paradox after The Plant Paradox. I know him as a great cardiac surgeon. I actually first met him, he probably won't remember this, in his operating room at Loma Linda. I brought transesophageal echo in. He has many more innovations in open heart surgery than I ever dreamed of, but I was an anesthesiologist and cardiovascular anesthesiologist in that era. In any case, he has now been transformed, I would say, from someone who worked on illness care and improving cardiac function after an event to now trying to prevent it and doing so in a major way. So, Dr. Gundry, thanks very much for coming on.
Hi, I really appreciate being on the show.
So this book is subtitled How to Die Young at a Ripe Old Age. It's called The Longevity Paradox. And, of course, Gundry is G-U-N-D-R-Y. The book is available everywhere. Dr. Gundry, let's start at the beginning, if you will. One of the most interesting things you talk about in The Plant Paradox is that plants developed ways of combating their natural foes, insects, when the insects developed. And that's somewhat why we get a problem. Talk about how you got to the longevity paradox and how that came about.
Well, when I living in Palm Springs, which is sometimes called God's waiting room, I get the opportunity to take care of super old people who actually are doing very well. And coming from Loma Linda, where I spent most of my career, which is the only blue zone in the United States, so the place where the oldest living people live in a community, I've always been intrigued with longevity. So one of the problems with longevity, we all want to get old, but the prospect of getting old as we kind of look at our patients and friends and family is that getting old doesn't look very good. It involves surgery or stents or knee replacement or hip replacement or spending your later years in an assisted care facility where you may not recognize your family members. And getting old doesn't have to be that way. I think most of us would like to die young, but at a very old age. We want health span rather than necessarily a long lifespan that's sent in decline. And so that's the paradox of longevity. And I set out to show people that it doesn't have to be the way they assume it's going to be.
And now part of the thesis in the book and part of the operationalizing how to die young, if you will, or what we called having a young real age in my context, in that concept relates to the bacteria inside you. And so you go into the fact that in the book in a very comprehensive way, talking about both the evolution of this process and how bacteria developed to be part of us. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, our microbiome, that collection of bacteria and viruses and fungi and parasites, is, you know, hundreds of trillions of cells. And they actually, if we did a body count, a cell count, they'd constitute about 90% of the cells within us. And if we did a gene content, their genetic material would be 99% of all the genetic material in us. And with every passing year since the Human Microbiome Project has started, we're beginning to realize that those bacteria are at least as important as human cells, but many of us would argue they're far more important than human cells, in keeping their home, which is us, in tip-top shape. And particularly laboratory research has shown that the aging process for a good part is actually determined at the interaction between the microbiome and the gut wall interface. And keeping that microbiome gut wall interface as robust as possible and keeping the wall as intact as possible, I think, is one of the real keys to aging that is rapidly coming out from research. And there, in animal models, the breakdown of the gut wall is how aging rapidly progresses. And so the book is teaching people how to stop that breakdown and even repair the breakdown that's already there.
And tell us about some of the you go through a regular plan, which includes obviously a fair bit of cooking, as well as other things such as dancing your way into old age, which is obviously getting younger from the inside out. But talk to us a little bit about the foods that we should think about if we want to keep that barrier intact.
Well, one of the things that's critical to keeping that barrier intact is a generous layer of mucus that actually sits on top of our enterocytes, the lining of our gut. And that wall is actually one cell thick, as you well know, and it covers the surface areas of a tennis court inside of us. So there are bacteria, particularly Akkermansia mucinophilia, what a name, that actually not only live in the mucus layer, but actually promote the production of more mucus. And the more mucus we have, the more immune we have from attack by, for instance, lectins, those plant proteins that are designed to interfere with our digestive wall. And the foods that Akkermansia mucinophilia like are primarily resistant starches that can be found in tubers like yams or taro root or jicama or rutabaga, and also in the inulin-containing vegetables, particularly the chicory family, like radicchio, like Belgian endive, like chicory, like frisée, artichokes, for instance, Jerusalem artichokes. These all have sugar molecules that we can't digest, but that these particular bacteria love. And the more of these sorts of sugars, carbohydrates that we can't digest, but they can digest, the more healthy the mucus layer in our gut is.
Now, some of these, for example, the Jerusalem artichoke is known as something that produces a lot of gas as the bacteria metabolize that sugar. So some people try and avoid that. How do you get around that?
Well, I tell my patients, and I see patients 7 days a week, including the weekends, that in some cultures, farting at the table is a sign of respect for the cook. And most of the time, the GAPS diet, which removes these fermentable fibers, I think is contrary to long-term good health. And with my patients' slow introduction of these foods, I, if you will, talk them through this period. And usually after about a month, that gas production and that feeling of bloating subsides and becomes actually non identifiable. You know, it's interesting. I use the example of a very popular Italian salad is tricolore salad. And I think it's not a without reason that two of the vegetables in that salad are radicchio and Belgian endive. And the third one is arugula, which is a cruciferous vegetable. And then, of course, you slather some olive oil and balsamic vinegar on it, and you've got probably one of the great longevity foods, and it's all over Italy and the south of France.
And you do have, I should tell people that in the book, The Longevity Paradox, How to Die Young at a Ripe Old Age, there is a plan, and it does suggest the menus, items, and they're really quite, and gives you what to eat, what resistant starches are. Now, one of my good friends, Mike Croupain, who I've written a book or two with, has said that, in fact, when you take, for example, sweet potatoes and put them in the refrigerator overnight, they become resistant starch. And so he would say to me, is this a good choice from the standpoint of keeping that mucus layer?
Yeah, absolutely. And your point is well taken. Things like sweet potatoes, even, believe it or not, white basmati rice, if you refrigerate it after you cook it, and then even reheat it, you'll have far more production of resistant starch. Another little trick, particularly with rice, is to cook it with about a teaspoon of coconut oil during the cooking process, and that's actually been shown to make the rice more resistant to digestion. And any of these little tricks, I think, are incredibly useful in the long run.
Now, one of the other things you talk about in the book is the endocrine disruptors and bisphenol A. I don't know if you got to bisphenol S. I can't remember.
Yep, we did. Yep.
But in any case, the point is, talk to us a little bit about endocrine disruption and why that's so bad, and what you mean by endocrine disruption.
Well, you know, I talk about in the plant paradox and also the longevity paradox about the seven deadly disruptors, and endocrine disruptors are certainly one of those. These are, for the most part, estrogen-like compounds. And unlike natural hormones like estrogen, these pseudo-hormones do not use a system where a hormone normally attaches to a receptor on a cell surface. It delivers the message of what it wants the cell to do, and then it detaches, much like docking the space shuttle at the space station. Endocrine disruptors, on the other hand, will dock on a receptor, for instance, an estrogen receptor, and then rarely, if ever, undock. They stay attached to that receptor. And what's happened with, for instance, BPA and BPS is minute amounts, which would appear to have no hormonal effect, magnify the effect because they always remain attached. And we have to remember that estrogen is one of the purposes of estrogen is to store fat for an upcoming pregnancy. And so estrogen is a wonderful fat-storing hormone, as any pre-teenage girl can attest to. So we're constantly bombarded with these estrogen-like substances that are promoting obesity, regardless of other really bad things that people are eating. And we're just awash now in these endocrine disruptors.
And one of the questions is, when guys have this estrogen-like substance, the BPA and the BPS, that is common in can liners as well as receipts, what happens to a guy that gets it?
Well, quite honestly, we now have a nation of men who appear to be about 6 to 9 months pregnant. And we store fat aggressively because of the same hormonal signals. We're seeing young boys, 8, 9 years old, with man boobs. And it's when you look, none of this happened 50 years ago. And none of these plasticizers and endocrine disruptors were available back then. And that's just one of the mischief makers.
We've been talking with Dr. Gundry, Dr. Stephen Gundry, who's author of The Longevity Paradox, the recent book, as well as The Plant Paradox in the past. He is a magnificent, or was a magnificent, cardiac surgeon who's, I guess, would be called a reformed cardiac surgeon, and is now a master at preventing chronic disease. The Longevity Paradox, How to Die Young at a Ripe Old Age. When I started this, I said this was 953B. It's actually 954B of our podcast. So this is 954B, and the book is absolutely magnificent and is clearly written and described as this interview was. He is magnificent at making it understandable for scientists as well as layperson. The data is really quite, quite good, and we're privileged to have Dr. Gundry, G-U-N-D-R-Y, the book, The Longevity Paradox. So thank you, Dr. Gundry. Thank you, Randall, for great engineering. And of course, thank you for downloading us. Do tell your friends about us, rate us. 50,000 or so of you who download us every week can't all be wrong. So thanks again. We'll be back next week with another great interview. This one, actually, the next week will be about food safety. So thanks again, and thank you, Dr. Gundry.